Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 97. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffey, well, he's not with me right now. I'm in Houston, Texas for UFC Fight Night 104, Bermudez versus Korean Zombie. Meanwhile, Cole Coffey is back home in Las Vegas. Now, there's good reason for that. My man Matt Erickson, his mom lives down here just a little bit north of Houston in the Woodlands. So, of course, he wanted to sneak down here and see his mom like a good son should. Meanwhile, I am a native Texan. I always try to get home to Texas whenever I can. Actually from Dallas. Wish I could have snuck up and seen my family as well, but couldn't do that. But at least got to get to my home state, eat a little bit of crawfish, have a little bit of brisket, the things you got to do while you're in Texas. And I am going to stick around for an extra day as well. I had hoped that maybe I'd be in Houston, Texas, and the Dallas Cowboys would make it to the Super Bowl. But alas, they did not. And so I don't know. I'll probably just end up at a local purveyor of frosty beverages to catch the game on Super Bowl Sunday. We'll see how that goes. So, first of all, let me just say, apologize. We are having some issues on iTunes. My man Cole Coffey is trying to work that out. Episode number 96 and 96 and a half are showing up sometimes, not showing up at other times. So we're having some little issues there. We're working on that. There is SoundCloud. I know you can listen to it there. I think there's a couple other options as well. I'm not going to lie. I'm not very technical. But apologize that we are having a little bit of issues. I will say if you weren't able to listen to 96 and a half, probably for the best. I was a little bit tired, a little bit frustrated, and had maybe a few too many frosty beverages, and I may have lost control of my mouth just a little bit. There may have been an F-bomb or two or two dozen or so issued on that. So if I offended your humble ears, please, humble ears? No. If I offended your sensitive ears, let me humbly apologize for that. So, but back in business this week. Okay, Houston. Been here before, of course. Been here for UFC events. It's the first time I've ever been in a Super Bowl host city. It's buzzing, man. It's buzzing like crazy. You can't believe all the stuff that's going on. I've never been a part of these kind of festivities, so it's just amazing to see all the stuff that's planned around it, all the media that's here, everything that's going on. And it's just loaded up. I mean, in addition to the fights on Saturday night, of course, there's a Taylor Swift concert, I think, at the baseball stadium. So, I mean, you're talking about all kinds of stuff going on. Hotel rates. Good Lord. We're pretty much some of the only traveling media that made down here. As far as the Nationals go, I think Sherdog is supposed to be here. Dave Mandel, you know, he's their one-man wolf pack. I didn't see him today at Open Workers. I think they're supposed to be here. MMA Fighting wasn't going to be here, but Casey Lydon and Esther, I saw them today. They showed up kind of late. Apparently, well, Casey's actually from here as well, so he's got family, and I think they were able to find a way to make it down here. So anyway, it's not a lot of travel media, but man, I'm telling you right now, it's expensive. I got lucky. If you're ever planning on going to a Super Bowl city, good Lord, make sure you do it plenty of time in advance. I think I booked like 2 months out, and obviously it wasn't enough because when I went to look, everything in downtown was completely sold out. And then even on the outskirts, you know, we're talking 25, 30 miles outside of town, you know, it's like $300 for a Motel 8 or something like that. And so, to be honest, I thought this might be the first event that MMA Junkie missed since, what, I think 2010? Was that when UFC 112 was? The first Abu Dhabi show was the last show that we didn't have somebody there for. So, the hotels were insanely expensive. I booked two Airbnbs, like apartments that I found that had instant booking, and as soon as I booked it, I got an email back like, oh, I'm sorry, it's unavailable. So, you know, they just forgot to change their rates or whatever for that day, and they were like, uh-oh, this guy tried to book my Super Bowl weekend, I'm canceling on him. So I was getting worried when I got two cancellations. Fortunately, I found a couple here with a guest house. I wouldn't even call it a guest house. It's like maybe an old garage that was converted, maybe. It's like they call it a cottage. It's actually really nice. It's it's got a little kitchenette in here, and you know, bed, bathroom, office, all that stuff. So everything I need. So I'm staying in a neighborhood called the Heights. If you're familiar with Houston, that's where I am, sitting around in somebody's backyard, basically, on a converted garage, with a little bit of a frosty beverage. In fact, I need to go ahead and just, oh yeah, there we go, having a little frosty beverage and talking to you guys now. You may say, what the hell? Because I've had a couple people ask me, what the hell is the UFC doing trying to book a UFC, you know, around the Super Bowl? Well, you'll know this has always been a pay-per-view weekend. It was always in Las Vegas. And I do kind of like the strategy of them not doing it on pay-per-view. It's just so hard for them to get media. You know, I mean, media is focused on the Super Bowl. There's no question about it. Sports media is focused on the Super Bowl. It's hard for them to get it. And so they said, look, man, let's take it off pay-per-view. Let's go to Fox Sports 1 with this one, FS1. This is a better strategy for us overall. And to be honest, I think I have to agree with it. Now, this is a Fox broadcast Super Bowl, so Fox kind of wanted to put everything together, have like a big, you know, superstar type weekend. It's cool. You get a lot of, you know, cross promotion there. You get a lot of you know, interplay between the two sports, so to speak. You know, you've had UFC stars at Radio Row all week, and, you know, I'm sure on Saturday night you're going to have a lot of celebrities who are in town already coming in for the Super Bowl that'll be there. That'll look good for the UFC. I'm sure, to be honest with you, there's network executives and advertising executives and people like that whose names we will never know, but who are the power brokers in television. I'm sure that the UFC will be kind of buttering them up and hosting them as guests to kind of give them the VIP treatment. So that's what's going on. Now, important to note, the Fox does not broadcast every Super Bowl. The way the contract works with the Super Bowl is it rotates between three networks. That is CBS, NBC, and Fox. So Fox only has it every third year. So to say, well, maybe I know there's always going to be a UFC in the host city every year, we don't know that that's necessarily going to be their strategy. You know, if Fox wasn't involved, you know, would they maybe go somewhere else? I don't know, so we'll find out. Due to the nature of the crowd and what's going on, the space that they needed, I mean, the fighters are actually staying out by the airport. They're at the Sheraton George Bush International, I believe, is where they're at. So even they're not getting to stay in town. Now, not a big deal. There's no ceremonial weigh-ins this week. So, I mean, really, the only time they're going to be having to make that shuttle ride is on fight night. So tomorrow morning, Friday morning, we always sit down and record this on Thursday night. So we will have the official weigh-ins first thing in the morning. No ceremonial weigh-ins afterwards. Basically, from what I understand, you know, all the arenas are booked, everything's done. The Toyota Center, which is hosting the fights, is actually playing host to a basketball game. The Rockets are going to play there tomorrow night, Friday night. So, really, there just wasn't a need for it. On top of that, you know, there's so much programming with other stuff that the Fox just said, hey, we don't really need a weigh-in show. So, a ceremonial weigh-ins. I think they're still going to do some type of promotional show, but just not the ceremonial weigh-ins. Now, you know, is this a sign of what's to come with the weigh-ins? Probably. I mean, the UFC's already decided, as we've talked about before, no more ceremonial weigh-ins for Fight Pass-only shows. They're not going to do that. So if it's only on Fight Pass, FS1 doesn't ask for the weigh-in, so they won't get it. And it just keeps the UFC, it keeps their costs down. You know, you don't have to rent an arena. You don't have to build a stage. You don't have to pay for, you know, everything that's going on that day. So I think eventually we'll see the ceremonial weigh-ins go away. I still honestly would like to see something in the afternoon in front of the fans. I mean, the face-offs. We've talked about it before, but you got to have the face-offs, right? I mean, that's drama. That's fun, you know? And I do hate the charade of just putting somebody on a scale that's not even plugged in and a commissioner pretending to read and all that. Yeah, I think we can get rid of that. But I think you still got to have the face-offs in the afternoon, man. You got to. Let them get rehydrated. We're going to do face-offs tomorrow, so we'll have video of that from the official weigh-ins. We'll have video of that on MMA Junkie. And, of course, I'll be live streaming it as well on Facebook Live. But, you know, that's still kind of early in the morning. It's at the hotel. It's not in front of a crowd. And, you know, it's just kind of a weird situation. So, I don't know. I think we'll definitely see some changes. I think we'll probably see it once the new TV contract is in place. Right now, you know, the UFC is contracted to deliver a certain number of events and footage and all the things that are surrounded that, and you know, sponsors have paid for advertising time to have their brand on the scale. You know, think about that. You know, that's been sold, so you know, you can't just pull the scale right away. It's you can't make changes on the fly, as easy it may seem to be like, well, let's just fix this up. But, you know, there's things that are already in place and money that's been spent and all that, so can't be done just yet. So but I think we will see it. So anyway, Dennis Bermudez versus Chan Sung Jung, the main event. Kind of a, I don't know, I guess an unexpected fight when they announced it, but what the hell would you expect? Who would you expect the Korean Zombie to fight? The guy's coming back for more than 3 years on the shelf, and the last fight was in August 2013 when he lost the title fight to Jose Aldo. Now, think about this, too. Now, not only has it been more than 3 years, that was his only fight of 2013. He also only fought once in 2012, And that was that awesome win over Dustin Poirier. Actually, that was in easy for me to remember. That was in May of 2012. I remember because watched that one on TV because I couldn't make it out there because that was the week that my son was born. So I definitely couldn't go there. So we're talking about a guy that hasn't fought in 3 years, and then, you know, even when he was fighting at the tail end there, wasn't fighting that much. Now, a big portion of why he took off, of course, was the military job. In South Korea, you do have to do a couple years of mandatory service. He did that thanks to the U.S. forces out there, Command Sergeant Major John Wayne Troxel, who's a big MMA fan. Of course, we got to meet him. We went out there in Seoul, about a year and a half ago, which was awesome. And he was a huge MMA fan. And, you know, he had actually said, hey, you know, I've actually checked in on Chan Sung Jung and talked to him. The job that the Korean military doing was basically a desk job. They had him doing paperwork and that sort of thing. So that worked out good. He got to rest. So if you talk to the Korean Zombie, he'll say, listen, I'm better, man. I had a chance to let my body heal. I had a chance to rest up and injuries are gone. He looks bigger to me than I remember. Again, now we're talking about a couple years, but he looks a little bit more like muscular and filled out in just the brief interactions I've had with him. I had a chance to see him at the hotel, and he spoke a little bit of English, just a touch of English. You know, it's good to be back, that sort of thing. So, you know, I think I'm excited for him to be back because he is such a fun fighter. But a lot of question marks, man. That kind of time off, I don't know how you know what to expect. You know, I had to tape my staff prediction earlier, and I went with Dennis Bermudez. But, I mean, not that Chan Sung-jung can't win this fight, but, Man, if I was a gambling man, I just don't think I could put any money on this thing because I just feel like we have no idea what we're going to see, right? I mean, you're guessing. And if you're guessing, that doesn't seem smart. So I went with Dennis Bermudez. I mean, he is on a two-fight winning streak. He did pick up wins over Honey Jason and Tatsuya Kawajiri recently. He'd had a couple losses before that. He's actually number 12 in the latest USA Today Sports MMA Junkie, MMA Featherweight ranking. So, you know, this is a big fight for him. Certainly, Bermudez is going to have the wrestling advantage. There's no doubt about that. But he's going to be facing a little bit of a height discrepancy. Korean Zombie's, I want to say, a good 3, maybe even 4 inches taller, depending on, if you're just reading the stats, is one thing. But when you stand next to him, man, they just seem like different body types. You know, obviously, Chan Sung-jung is he does look a little bit more muscular, but he seems a lot leaner and almost lankier in some respects. Whereas Dennis Bermudez is the stocky wrestler type or whatever. So, interesting matchup. Again, to me, it comes down to the question marks around Chan Sung-jung. I just feel like I can't answer that. I feel like anything I say is basically just guessing. I mean, we saw him at the workouts and he did look good, but I mean, hitting pads is not getting in a fight. It's not going full speed and having that timing. So, open workouts were today. Like I said, we saw both those fighters there. Dennis definitely put on more of an effort, more of a full workout or whatever. And it seems like he's really enjoying the moment. It seems like he's really is soaking it all in. He actually went to the media day earlier in the week, the big Super Bowl media day, I should say, and actually was posing as a reporter for the UFC and got in some questions. And kind of wild, he's enjoying it all. It's definitely having fun. And as he said, he's just trying to soak it all in. It's crazy because the open workouts today were the only time that we've had a chance to talk to the main eventers, right? And it was bizarre because literally nobody was asking questions. Now, maybe it's just an I'm an a-hole and I ask too many questions or I don't know. I don't know. But this is the entire scrum for Dennis Bermudez, the main event fighter for UFC Fight Night 104. I'm going to play the entire scrum right now. And listen, it's 90 seconds.
Just talk about this experience, being in the main event, Super Bowl week. It seems like you're soaking it all up, going to media day and stuff.
It's good, man. I'm just trying to enjoy it, and not worry about, what's actually at stake here, right? This is a super big opportunity, super big scene here. So I'm just really just trying to have fun with it and just, have fun with the whole experience, all the hard work's done. Just go out there and do what I do, I'll be fine.
How do you prep for a guy that we haven't seen fight in 3 years? How do you get ready for him?
Our strategy is we just looked at his most recent fights, and we're just getting prepared for him to have not skipped a beat. We're ready for the best Korean Zombie. We want to fight the best Korean Zombie.
What do you need to talk about what's at stake? What do you think is at stake here for you? Because since he's been out, he's not in the rankings, but of course he's definitely a named guy as well. So what do you think?
Right. In my head, I think he's probably a top five guy. You know what I mean? He was in the top five when he left for military leave. So, I mean, I think even a win over him probably moves me up the ranks a little bit. And I don't think about losing.
And you talk about your division, man. It's a fun division right now, man. A lot of talented guys. What do you think this does earn you? Where do you think you should be next if you pick up a win here?
After picking up a win here, realistically, I would like to fight Max Holloway. He's got I've got a win over him, and he's got the interim belt, man. That's the reason why I signed up to be in the UFC, is to be a world champion.
Yeah, that's it. That's the whole thing. That's your main event. Bizarre kind of caught me a little bit off guard, to be honest with you. It was so short. I mean, Dennis Rivera's packed a lot of quotes in there, man. He talks fast, and you know, he's firm in what he wants, and saying that he wants Max Holloway. You know, I don't know if he's quite in line for that fight. And it sounds like Max Holloway is actually going to be doing some filming, shooting a movie, and then he'll be looking to do the unification bout with Jose Aldo, of course, at some time this year. But I don't know, man. Just weird. I mean, there wasn't a ton of media there, but I don't know. Just no questions at all. It seemed very, very bizarre to me. So, like I said, he did call out Max Holloway. Max Holloway didn't know this because it was kind of happened around the same time. But there's actually an interview on MMA Junkie as well with Max Holloway. So if you want to check that out, do that. You'll see that USA Today Sports has a reporter and a filming studio basically out there at Radio Row. So they got a little booth there. I'm not going to lie, I wish we would have known about it because we've got a general sports reporter there, and she doesn't know MMA. It's just fair enough. It'd be like sending me to cover a baseball game. You know, like I played it when I was a kid, but I'll be damned. I looked at a Dallas Mavericks box score the other night when I was sitting there watching a TV, and I don't know a single player on the team. I didn't recognize a single name. Dirk Nowitzki didn't play. I guess he's so old now that, you know, he doesn't play on consecutive nights or whatever. They're resting him up. But I don't know anybody. I don't know anybody, you know, so I can't blame somebody. It'd be impossible for me to do that. So, you know, she's doing the best she can, you know, covering MMA. But, damn, I wish I would have known about it. So maybe we could have had an extra body here. And, you know, myself could have been there asking questions. Or, you know, maybe the young Mike Bond would be out there. Or who knows? You know, hopefully the next time there's a UFC around a Super Bowl, I will know about this ahead of time. And I will make sure that somebody's there. But Max Holloway did do an interview there. Juliana Pena was there. Juliana Pena. What am I talking about? Juliana Pena wasn't there. Valentina Shevchenko was there. Amanda Nunes was there. Yair Rodriguez was there. Matt Mitrione was there. And on Friday, actually, Anthony Johnson is scheduled to be there. And UFC President Dana White, who has been ducking me. See, if I'd have had a booth there, we could have gotten that interview done because he's been ducking me. I'm going to try to get that rescheduled soon. So pay attention to that. That'll be streaming. They're streaming live on Facebook, and then we'll put it on our MMA Junkie Facebook as well. And then if there's anything particularly good out of it, we'll take it, and we'll actually put a highlight and put it on full MMA Junkie as well. So a lot of content coming from Super Bowl Radio Row, which is pretty cool. Now, while I was not allowed to attend that, our fight week did kick off on Wednesday. I flew in Tuesday night. Got things started on Wednesday morning. Had a couple of sit-down interviews. Always like to grab a few extra people. You know, if we're coming to town, I don't want to talk to three or four people. I want to talk to seven or eight or nine, you know, and get a few extra interviews. You know, just a couple of quick updates. Check in, see how people are doing. And listen, one of the people I wanted to talk to and got a chance to talk to was Beck Rawlings. I have to admit it, I love talking to Beck. She's a controversial figure, to say the least. I know some people are not fans. I do happen to be a fan. I think that, you know, she speaks openly and freely about a lot of things, and I enjoyed it. You know, I did want to talk to her. I guess, you know, I'm always kind of tuned into moms and dads as my child is getting older, as little man Eli is growing up. You know, what it's like for her, you know, as a single mom, she spends time away from her kids, and then, you know, her last fight out, she lost to Paige VanZant, and I know what a big fight that was for her. You know, what does it feel like to go back home? I mean, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Gosh, every fighter sacrifices and hates to lose, but, you know, when part of that price that you paid was to be around, you know, be away from your kids for so long, man, you know, does it hurt even more? So I asked her about that. I asked her about a number of topics. Of course, her fight was in there as well, and, you know, she's rematching Tisha Torres at UFC Fight Night 104. That was a fight that happened on the season of The Ultimate Fighter that they were on, and Tisha Torres actually picked up a decision there. So this is a rematch. And probably no surprise, Beck's not all that impressed with Tisha. I don't think Beck's impressed with many people at all. So, but it was just fun to talk to her. So while I, you know, re-up on my frosty beverage over here, because I got nobody to help out. I'm just sitting here all by myself. So while I do that, listen to my conversation with Beck Rawlings.
Probably don't want to spend too much time talking about your last fight, but let's go back to it. I mean, obviously a frustrating night for you. What kind of lessons do you take out of that?
Look, it's no lesson that I haven't learned previously. Like, my debut fight, I got kicked in the head and I got knocked out cold. I was, like, out for, like, a minute. The only thing frustrating about my last loss was I wasn't out. I feel like the ref didn't give me a chance to fight back. Like, he kind of just stepped in and I saw his legs coming for me and I was like, well, thanks, bro. But that was the only frustrating part. You never know, like, I could have been done, but he didn't give me that opportunity to prove that I wasn't done. So yeah, that's one thing that I did learn is refs still kind of feel like we're made of glass because we have vaginas and boobs, which is kind of frustrating. It's like in this sport we are actually treated like the most equal out of all the like professional sports. We get paid the same, we get the same opportunities, yet we're still looked at differently inside the cage by refs and judges and things like that. So it's kind of shitty in that part, but you know, it's only young. We're only young in the UFC, so hopefully that changes.
You think that's a conscious thing, or do you think it's almost like subconscious that, you know,
yeah,
they don't even really mean to err on that way, but that's what they do?
Yeah, for sure. Because some of the some stoppages I've seen in the previous, like the latest UFCs, like if that was a girl for sure, it would have got stopped earlier, and they just let them take, like almost like unneeded damage, which is kind of frustrating, but it is what it is. There's nothing you can do about it. You know, I think maybe being more vocal about it will kind of make them aware of it maybe, so they kind of do check themselves and not step in prematurely. But yeah, other than that, like I was happy with my performance with my fight. Like the first round was perfect. I was thrown off a little bit by her unwillingness to kind of engage. I thought she was just gonna move forward like she always does, but she kind of played a different game, and I was like, oh, that's like this is what I was expecting. The crazy kicks and things like that in the first round, I was just like, what the fuck, man? What are you fucking doing? Like it was like really, and then shit like that happens in round two, and it's like ah, like it's why everyone loves this sport is because anything can happen, and that proved it that night that yeah, she can throw some stupid Hail Mary kick up in the air that I laughed at in round one and catch you. So it's that's yeah,
that's funny. Where do you stand, I mean, taking male and female out of the equation, just as a fighter, where do you stand on like fighter safety as a referee's concern? Because I think some people are like, well, they're protecting me long term, but other fighters are saying, you know, each win or loss can cost me a lot of money, let me go as long as I can.
Absolutely. Like it's, we're choosing to be fighters. This is what we love to do, so let us fight. It's not like we're going into this fight not knowing what we're getting ourselves into. We've signed a contract to win a fight, you know, and the potential of taking damage is like we know what we're into, so let us do what we've come to do. And I feel like judges and referees, they don't realize that their decision, it's not just like a bad night for them and they cop flack from fans. Like you could potentially ruin a fighter's career. You're potentially losing money for that fighter, like half of their purse. And it could be the last straw for that fighter, and they could get cut and, you know, not have a job and be homeless. Like it's make or break for some of us fighters. And I feel like the stakes are so high that I feel like they should be held more accountable for their shit, and they should educate themselves more and be a little bit better at their job.
Yeah. What's it like for you? I know every fighter makes sacrifices, of course, but you being a mom as well. What's it like for you, you know, after you have a frustrating night like that to go home? And, you know, is it great to be around family again and recharging, or is it even more frustrating because you know all the sacrifice you make and then don't get the result that you want?
For sure. It was heartbreaking. You know, I spent 8 weeks of my life over in the U.S., away from my family, away from my kids. I sacrificed a lot, and I sacrificed a lot of money as well to come over here and do what I have to do in order to step into that cage. So yeah, it sucks. It sucks to lose. But it's also nice to go home to a loving family, my kids that I love and adore. So it's shitty. I feel like it kind of hurts a little bit more because I sacrifice so much for what I want to do. But yeah, losing sucks either way, regardless whether you're rich, poor, have kids or not. Like, we're fighters and we're competitive and we want to be the best in the world and we want to win. So yeah, losing sucks regardless.
Well, so the UFC giving you a big opportunity here. I mean, a respected opponent. How did this fight come about? And I mean, obviously you guys have a history. Were you campaigning for this at all?
No idea. Like, I was kind of like, oh, cool. It was completely random to me. I put my hand up to fight on the last Australian card, and I kind of got shoved off that card because of the China card that got cancelled. They kind of had to squeeze bouts onto that. So I've just been kind of just waiting, like, hey, can I fight? Hey, can I fight? And they came to me with Tisha, so I was like, hell yeah. Like, I've wanted a rematch ever since our first fight in The Ultimate Fighter. I didn't ask for it. I wasn't very vocal like about it, but you know, I'm gonna take it if it's given to me. So yeah, definitely very random, and
it's interesting. Have you been watching her career? You know, obviously since you guys met, I mean, have you watched her and kind of seen how she's improved or changed or that sort of thing?
Yeah, like I try to tune into all the strawweight fights. Obviously they're potential opponents for me. So, and I like watching the girls fight. Like, I could miss a show if it's just got the guys on it, but I very rarely miss the girls fights. So yeah, I've been keeping track of, you know, what she's doing, what she's been up to.
What do you think?
I honestly don't think she's changed at all. She still has the same game plan, same style. She's, you know, volume, punches in bunches. Still can't finish a fight to save a life. Still hits like a little pussy.
Just keeping it real.
But yeah, it's like she's a good fighter. She's proven that she's a good fighter. I'm not taking that away from her, but I feel like she hasn't evolved.
Very much. So is this, I don't want to say personal, but is it special because you kind of get something back, or do you just have to throw that out and this is just another fight?
It's just another fight. You know, like, no matter who I'm fighting, I want to win. It's nice, obviously, to get a rematch. And, you know, I'm always coming out there to prove something. I need to win. And I like to finish the fights early. Like, you want to get in and out, so that's the game plan. But she's a tough opponent, and she's proved that. So could be a decision, could be long drawn out fight. You never know.
A lot of strawweights here, by the way, right? I mean,
yeah, it's like the strawweight showdown.
Right. So what's that been like? I mean, has it been fun to kind of be reunited with people, or has there been some cross looks?
It's been cool. It's cool to have like a bunch of girls on the card. I think it's awesome. We obviously bring something, a different dynamic to cards, and I feel like the fans are excited to see all of us throw down. So yeah, it's really cool.
Definitely. Well, I know this is a big fight for you. What are the goals for this year? Are you picking up a win here? What's the goals for 2017?
Look, I want to fight as often as I can. I need money. I need to support my kids, so I'm trying to bank them up. But not everything goes to plan sometimes. But yeah, look, I'd like to fight 3 times this year if possible. I'm really, really hoping for the 125 division. 115 is just getting harder and harder to make. I've had a lot of medical issues due to trying to make 115, and it's kind of shitty. So I'm really like pushing to hopefully get that division sooner than later. That would be my ideal. My ideal year would be 125, and I'm like straight there. I could fight 4 or 5 times at 125 a year, make a whole bunch of fucking money, but 115 is what I'm stuck with right now, so yeah.
It doesn't seem like you're alone in that boat, so I mean...
No.
What does it feel like as being one of those people when they're like, well, we just can't do it, oh, by the way, here's 145?
Yeah, I was kind of like, really? I was like, like, why? Right. I was kind of confused, and I think that everyone was kind of confused by it. But it's cool, obviously, that they want to bring in more divisions. I was just kind of a little, you know, upset that it wasn't the division I want. I was like a little spoiled brat, like, it's my division. But yeah, it's cool, obviously, like, gives more opportunity for the women, and, you know, a few years ago, we weren't even in the UFC, so we've come a long way. But yeah, it's kind of sucky when there's a lot of big 115ers that aren't natural 115ers, and we're really hurting ourselves and our bodies trying to make this weight, and it's not cool. So sooner rather than later would be better for 125, fingers crossed.
Well, we'll see how that plays out. First step, I guess, is getting a win on Saturday. I guess,
absolutely.
When you play this one out in your mind, you know, how do you see this one going down?
You know, I've played it out, like, I'm a big believer of visualization, and I've played it out a lot of different ways. you know, ideal, obviously, you want to get that knockout, like, highlight reel, but I feel like it can go any way. Like, I feel like I'm a better boxer, I'm a better grappler, and I just bring all round, I think I'm better. And, you know, I'm going in there to hurt people. That's my number one thing that I always say, is I'm actually going in there to finish you. I'm going in there to try and hurt you and knock your head off. I feel like she's not the same. She's going in there to score points. She's going in there to win by a decision. Like, it's kind of what makes this matchup a little bit more exciting, because we've both kind of got two different things on our mind. But yeah, hopefully I could win by knockout. That would be like my ideal way.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Beck Rawlings. Hopefully you enjoyed hearing from her. Like I said, I know she likes to stir the pot a little bit sometimes, but has honestly become one of my favorite interviews. I just enjoy picking her brain a little bit. So, listen, if you like what you're hearing, do me a favor. Go into iTunes, leave us a rating, a review, if you will. You could do like a D. Hyder. He left us, said, well, first of all, he said 5 stars, so that's key right there. And then he said, love hearing the MMA Roadshow every week, especially the Anna Haas. John and Cold Coffee bring that special blend we've all come to love. Keep it up, guys, and don't change a thing. Much appreciated, Mr. Hyder. Yeah, and I will be doing Anna Haas. It'll be me. I'll try to grab somebody else. I'll see what I can do. I know you probably get bored hearing my damn voice, but not a lot of media here, not a lot of options, but I've got that whole Sunday to myself. So I think I haven't seen the work schedule yet. Actually, watch. I'm going to end up scheduled to work. I didn't even talk to Dan about it. I'm going to get scheduled to work during the Super Bowl. we'll see what happens. But yeah, we'll be doing a little and a half for this week. So if football's not your thing, you can just pick up on the post-fight UFC talk. All right, let's talk about this. You know, since we're talking about football, how about this? Kind of MMA news. Have you guys seen the news with the Los Angeles Raiders? The Oakland Raiders? Good Lord. Yeah, see? Talking about other sports. The Oakland Raiders. Supposedly moving to Las Vegas, but in need of some financing. Sheldon Adelson, the casino magnate there, backed out. He was supposed to be spending a ton of money, a couple hundred million dollars. I believe like $600 million was what he was going to be willing to invest. And now he's saying he is out. Guess what? The Raiders need a bunch of money to move to Las Vegas. Can you think of any football-passionate billionaires with some money to spend in Las Vegas? Crazy, right? Maybe the Fertittas could step in. Now, I guess the interesting part is that, again, not following it that closely, but the owner of the Raiders has said that he's not willing to give up ownership of the team. And I think the money that's needed is not to go straight to the team. It's to help finance the stadium. Now, whether the Fertittas would be willing to own the stadium or not, or own a big chunk of it by investing in it, I don't know. Is that enough skin in the game for them? I mean, then you're not really part of a team. You know, you just got a facility. And I'm sure it could be profitable. I mean, oh, man, if you've seen the artist renderings for the stadium they're talking about in Las Vegas, it looks amazing, man. It looks really cool. And, of course, you know, that would host UNLV football games, which, you know, UNLV football is not that good. But, you know, I'm sure you could get other regional teams. I'm sure USC would want to come out and play a couple games there or something. Maybe get Arizona State to come in. Who knows? I mean, then you know, concerts and all that stuff. So, I mean, you find ways to fill your stadium, right? You're not just trying to get those 8 home games a year in the NFL schedule. But, you know, would the Fertittas come in if they're not an owner in the team? I don't know. But how crazy would that be, huh? I mean, they are absolute football fanatics. And for the money that they made off the USC, if they could reinvest that in the NFL, it does seem like things are lining up nicely for them. Cole Coffey, if he was here, he would tell you he thinks the whole thing was a setup to begin with. He thinks they were always going to buy into this team and, you know, always going to be a part of the Raiders ownership group. I don't know if that's the case. I think maybe things are just kind of unfolding that way. But Cole Coffey, the conspiracy theorist that he is, believes that Sheldon Adelson, who is friendly with the Fertittas, was basically just a placeholder for them to get the ball rolling, and then they'll jump in. So we'll see how it plays out. But find it interesting nonetheless. More UFC-related news. I have had a lot of people asking me through various forms of text and WhatsApp and Twitter and some other things about May 29th in Copenhagen, Denmark. I think that's going to happen. So there is going to be a Memorial Day weekend show. it's just not going to be in the U.S. That would be an FS1 show that would happen in Europe. I believe it's an FS1 show. Pretty sure it's an FS1 show, which might be an afternoon show, I guess, because I imagine it'd probably take place at night in Europe. Probably be an afternoon show on, what would that be, a Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon? That's going to be happening over there. So I think that's going to happen. I haven't heard anything official from USC officials, so unfortunately I can't, you know, break news. But, oh yeah, I think it's a Sunday if I'm looking at it right. Yeah, so Sunday morning show, huh? Kind of cool, right? No, nothing really going on at that time. That's just when baseball's going, so... All right, I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen. I've heard, but I have not heard anything official yet. So imagine we'll be getting some official reports very soon. It does sound like they're already starting to try and book some fights for that. So sounds like Europe is going to have another show. Also, since we've been talking about football, I believe, haven't heard official here yet either, but in April, let's just say that Chiefs fans, who happen to also be UFC fans, might find themselves very happy as well. How about that? And we'll just leave it at that. I think we all know what we're talking about there. Again, nothing official there, but sounds like Chiefs fans may have something to get excited about. All right, I did want to talk about one thing really quick, because I think this is important. The young Mike Bond tweeted the other day. Well, when I say the other day, how about yesterday, on Wednesday, February the 1st, Misha Cirkunov, Rick Story, and Lorenz Larkin have all been removed from the rankings by the UFC, and he said that they're no longer under contract. Now, we also saw today, I believe, reported that Thiago Tavares has gone elsewhere as well. He'll be fighting in Brazil. Now, did some digging around here with the people that I could talk to here on the ground in beautiful Houston, Texas. It is beautiful. The weather's so nice, by the way. Denver was cold. It's been beautiful here. But important to note, the UFC right now is bloated. They got too many people on the roster, and they need people to go away, to be honest with you. They got to cut contracts. They have too many fighters under contract. The thing just keeps growing and growing and growing, and they've got to do some culling. So that means they got to get rid of people. And how do they do it? Well, if you fight out your contract and you turn down a contract offer from them, you're no longer under contract at that point. And it's my understanding that's what's happened to every single person here. It's not we're cutting you. It's not, hey, you know, we're letting you go somewhere else. It's like, hey, listen, we just don't have anything for you right now. And if we don't re-sign you, then we don't have to have that clock start ticking on contracts where, you know, you basically owe somebody a fight or you end up defaulting on their deal. And so it's my understanding that the UFC has been in a couple of these situations and offered money, and the fighter says, you know what, that's not really the contract money I was looking for. I'm going to go test free agency. And at this point, the UFC says, fair play, good luck to you. You know, it's been a pleasure. Maybe we'll do business in the future. And it's an interesting position to be in as a fighter, because the UFC is not telling you they're done. But if you don't get the offer you want from anywhere else, guess what? Now you're just sitting around. And now you got to go back to UFC and say, hey, yeah, you know that offer you threw out there? Can we talk about that again? So it's an interesting time. I mean, people are definitely wanting to test free agency, and as right they should, man. If you're a fighter, you got to cash in while you're here, right? Make as much money as you can. Get out and move on to the next phase of your life. This is... as the UFC matchmakers have always said, this is not a career, it's an opportunity, and you've got a window to capitalize, so capitalize as much as you can. But be careful, because if there's not an offer on the other side, the grass may not be greener. So interesting time to be a fighter. I think everybody's rushing to free agency, and rightfully so, but I think you also have to be wary of, you know, kind of what the UFC is offering, and you know, pay attention to that as well. Otherwise, right now, it's a delicate position because they've got too many fighters on the roster. I mean, they're over 600 right now. They need to trim down. And so you're seeing fighters like this who said no to a deal, and now they find themselves without a position. So this will certainly be something that that we want to follow. And, yeah, see where these guys end up. It's interesting. From everything I was told and talked to people, it's not something done with malice. I mean, you know, the one name that really stuck out there to me, I mean, Lorenz Larkin kind of made it clear, right, that, hey, man, I basically went out. You know, I'm going to test the waters, and I don't know. I mean, he's even made it sound like he just doesn't really care for the UFC anymore. Maybe that's not true. Maybe that's miscategorizing him a little bit. But, you know, it seemed to me like he's, you know, kind of looking elsewhere. Rick Story, tough as nails, man. That dude, every time that he steps in there, man, you know you're getting a fight, right? So that one kind of stood out for me a little bit. I was like, man, Rick Story's a tough dude. But, you know, I thought, well, he's had these injury issues, and he's had some, you know, all this stuff with the disc in his back and neck. I mean, like, crazy stuff, you know, so maybe they just decided it was best. But the one that stood out to me is Misha Cirkunov. I mean, the guy's 4-0 in the UFC with 4 finishes. Certainly they're not going to cut him. I mean, that's kind of what got me poking around. I'm like, that makes no damn sense whatsoever. And sure enough, that's kind of what I was told, is that, listen, contract offers were made. I mean, they were out there. People weren't happy with him. So if they weren't happy with him, that's their choice. And now they got to decide if they can get something from another organization or not. So interesting times. I mean, does Misha Cirkunov, you know, a Canadian light heavyweight, have a lot of value to Bellator? I don't know. I mean, they've got some talent in their light heavyweight division. There's some matchups you could make there. Does Misha Cirkunov move the needle? He's certainly tough as hell. He's fun to watch fight. Does he sell tickets? Don't know. It's tough, man. It's a tough, tough time. I think everybody's figuring it out as we go along. So, anyway, that's kind of the update there. Same thing with Thiago Tavares. We mentioned him as well. He's fighting in Brazil. You know, was from everything I was told is that, listen, you know, they're not saying go away and don't ever come back. It's like, listen, I just don't have anything for you right now. If you want to fight, go fight. Go do your thing, and we wish you the best of luck, and maybe we can work together again down the line. So, interesting. All right. Back to Houston, co-main event, Alexa Grasso versus Felice Herrig. Interesting fight here. Alexa Grasso, of course, the undefeated Mexican prospect. Doing a great job of learning English, by the way. Her English keeps getting better and better and better. Her striking, if you haven't seen Alexa Grasso fight, fun to watch fight. She's got great hands. You know, came from essentially a boxing background, coached by her family, and a rising star in Mexico. Now, didn't necessarily have the best debut ever, right? Her UFC debut, I should say. She debuted earlier this year. It's February. No, it wasn't earlier this year, my friend. Late last year against Heather Jo Clark down in Mexico City, UFC Fight Night 98. Picked up a decision, went almost had the finish in the first round. Didn't get the finish. Clark proved her grittiness and gutted it out until the third round. And the decision was clear. But, you know, I saw some mixed reviews of Grasso after that. A lot of people that hadn't seen her fight before were like, I don't get it. What's the big deal? What's everybody so hyped about? But, you know, talked to her a little bit today, and she said, listen, man, that was tough. You know, and I'm telling you, man, she was treated like a star. The whole arena was there to watch her fight. Crazy. I mean, the expectations that must have been on her shoulders making a UFC debut in her home country of Mexico, man. Tough spot, and I thought she performed well. You know, were there things that she could have done better? Absolutely. Now, she's fighting Felice Herrig. Felice Herrig, gritty veteran, been around a long time as well. 11 wins, 6 losses, never been finished in her career. All of her losses have come by decision, so, you know, she's been in there with some of the best of them. And she fought last in July and picked up a performance bonus after submitting Kylan Curran at USC on Fox 20. And that was a great performance for Felice Herrig. And she said, listen, you know, I've had some issues. That performance was not, you know, an awesome night. You know, that was in Chicago, like her, you know, area where she lives. So it was important to her to, you know, it was a big fight, really, to kind of answer the critics and to kind of prove that she has something. I think people were like, listen, man, is this girl all flash? Because she's always been great at marketing herself. You know, she loves to take, provocative pictures, so to speak, and market herself in that way. But I think a lot of people were saying, hey, I want to see some substance over it. And then she had this amazing performance. And she's saying, listen, I've got more of that in me. That was not a one-night-only thing. I've got more in me. But, again, now facing the younger up-and-comer in Alexa Grasso. So, big fight in the co-main event here. I figured, you know, what the hell? I told you these scrums were short. It was basically just me asking questions. So, why not hear from both of them? It's not going to take a long time. Hear what they both had to say to me earlier today.
How much different is the feeling this time around being your second UFC fight?
Well, it's different because I did my camp in my hometown, in my city, in my gym, in my house, in my car, in my everything I know. So it was awesome. After that hard training camp I had in Mexico City, I think it's amazing. And to be back so soon, and I think I'm ready.
How tough of a situation was it for you in your debut fight to be in Mexico and have like all the expectations? It felt like the whole country was there, you know, just to see you.
Yes, I was very nervous. I had a lot of pressure on me. It was a really hard camp, you know, being in another city, the altitude, everything was different, but that helped me so much, like an athlete and like a human, because I learned a lot of me and my team and how can we work so well to have a great performance.
And what did you think about your performance in Mexico? Because you almost got the finish and then it, you know, went to a decision and you know, so what did you think? Were you happy with yourself or did you feel like you left something there?
No, I feel happy with myself. I know I was quite calm, but I didn't want to mess up. I wanted to do everything perfect. I didn't want to have any risk, but I think I did amazing and I'm going to do it better now.
And what do you think of the matchup with Felice? Obviously another tough veteran of the sport.
Yes, I know she's very, very well-rounded. She's very dangerous for me, but I've been training very hard for this fight. This is a great opportunity, not just for the weekend because it's full of people here. It's a great match for both of us.
And lastly for me, you're still so young in your UFC career, but people love your style, and they always say what you would look like against Joanna Jacek. Are you letting yourself think about that matchup already?
I hope one day I can fight against her. I know she's amazing. I really want to fight like her, but I'm too far from the top 10. I'm really far from her, but I'm working very hard to be in the top 10, then in the top 5, and I hope at the end of the year I can be in the top 5, so next year maybe I can fight with her.
You say you're too far away, but do you feel you're a top 5 fighter? I mean, not just because the number isn't there, but do you feel you're that good now? Or do you still...
Not now, but if I have the opportunity, I'm going to do my best, and I'm going to train as hard as ever.
Kabooga!
Felice, last time we saw you was a fantastic performance by you. I want to ask how important that was to you. I mean, you've always dealt with critics and that sort of thing, but how big was that win to you?
You know, the win against Kylan Curran was something that I always knew I had in me. But it was really big because for me it was a turning point. It was, you know, before that I had kind of hit rock bottom. My body, just from years and years of fighting, was put under so much stress. And I knew something was wrong but didn't know what. And I had taken a year off. You know, I worked with a doctor, Dr. Cowan, and he did all these labs on me. And we fine-tuned my body and got it back to being normal so that I could fight at peak performance.
Interesting. So what did that entail? Was that a diet change or?
No, it was actually like my cortisol levels were depleted. Like I didn't have enough melatonin to like get a good night's sleep. So it was pretty much, he's a naturopath, so I just worked on like getting my levels back up. It was a systematic regimen, like get up at 6 a.m. and take this, and then before workout I would take this, and then with lunch I would take this and that. And, you know, we just kind of built my body back up naturally and safely, and all USADA approved, so that's good.
Interesting. Did that play into why? Because I wondered, it's been a while since you fought. I mean, did that play into why it took so long to get another fight for you?
No, you know what? Actually, things just weren't lining up. After I fought Kylan, like, I was offered a fight, but I was a bridesmaid in a wedding, and you know, I've spent 14 years fighting and dedicating my entire life to fighting. Not that I haven't loved that, but I've also, you know, wanted to get back to being Felice the human being, and I think that it's nice to take a little time off just to recoup and come back and remember why I love the sport and not be burnt out over it. So things just kind of played out the way they did.
I was going to say, what do you think when they came to you with this matchup? Obviously, you know, she's the hot up-and-comer that everybody's high on, and you're the veteran. What did you think about it?
Honestly, I was really excited for this fight, for this matchup. Just, you know, I think I'm at a good place mentally and physically again, and I think styles make fights, and I'm just at a point in my career where I just want to go out there and put on fun, exciting fights for the fans, and I want to put on fights that like people are excited for and pumped up about, and I'm pumped up because I really think that, you know, it could be like fight of the night, and I think it's gonna be fun to watch.
All right, so big co-main event there with the ladies. Couple of good fights up here. Abel Trujillo versus James Vick. Now, I think this is one that's kind of sliding under the radar, right? I haven't heard many people talk about this, but I like this fight a lot. Oddsmakers have it as a pick 'em. I went with Abel Trujillo here, kind of leaning towards his wrestling a little bit, you know, a little bit maybe more well-rounded skill set. Now, he's going to have a big height differential, range differential to deal with. Abel Trujillo did tell me, you know, he's part of that Black Zillions team that's kind of revamping, I guess, right now. You got Glenn Robinson saying, you know, the Black Zillions are still going to be around, but certainly right now they're not going to be around in their same form. And Abel decided to kind of head out and do his own thing. Didn't want the distractions. Kind of put together a training camp around himself. We'll see if that helps. Sometimes it's tough. You know, when you don't have anybody there to push you and you're kind of the one calling the shots, that can be bad, you know, because you might not push yourself as hard as somebody else. But it can be a good thing, too. You know exactly what you need. You know exactly what you need to work on and what you want to work on and that sort of thing. So we'll be interested to see. But, I mean, Abel Trujillo, 10-2. Think about this. 10-2 in his last 12 fights. Only losses in there. Khabib Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson. How about that? Lost to the two guys that are fighting for the interim title here coming up soon. And that's it. Beat everybody else. So this is a big night for him. Of course, James Vick as well. Coming off that loss. You know, a lot of hype here. He's a Texan. The Texecutioner from Mineral Wells, Texas. He's fighting in his home state, which is as a fellow proud Texan. I can tell you that we are probably annoyingly proud of our state. And that's just the way we're brought up. And I know he's excited to be fighting here in his home state. He's coming off a big loss. You know, he had a nice little run going and lost bad to Beneil Dariush this past June at UFC 199. That was a crazy night of fights there in Los Angeles. Beneil Dariush just caught him. And James Vick said, hey, listen, I just got caught. You know, nothing to hold my head down about. You know, it happens in the fight game. And he actually said today he was actually pretty proud of himself because he didn't get knocked down by one shot. You know, he got knocked down by 20. That was pretty interesting to say. You know, it's like, listen, dude, yeah, I got caught, but look how many shots it took to put me down. So I kind of respected his attitude there. So love that fight, really do. Volkan Ozdemir, the first Swiss fighter making his way to the UFC, had a chance to meet him this week. Had never talked to him before. Sat down. If you want to hear from him, that's on YouTube. Get the full interview with me. It's just a one camera setup. It's not like the nice two cameras that we do when Cole Coffey's around because he gets everything set up nice. I just set it up like a little scrum, but had a chance to talk to him. Good attitude. You know, guy had an interesting story. He's going to fight for the heavyweight title in Titan. Got the call up and a couple weeks ago in Titan. Right away, let him out his fight. Day before the fight, Titan let him out. Said, don't worry about it, buddy. Know you want to be in the UFC. Your call's here. Hey, we're standing down. But that was a pretty bold move there. So he's stepping in, is making his debut. Been living and training in Florida. English is fantastic. And he's got some size to him. And he says, listen, I'm not intimidated to step in and face Ovince St. Preux. I know Ovince St. Preux fought for a title this past year. I know he's a top contender, but that's what I want to be. I want to be a top contender, so I am not concerned at all. Now, will Volkan have the UFC jitters? Is he stepping in out of his element a little too early? I don't know. We'll find out, but this is a big fight. Also, had a chance to speak to Ovince St. Preux this week for a little bit, and I really did enjoy talking to Ovince. He had some really interesting things to say about mental preparation, and I don't know. He just seemed in a good place. Sometimes OSP doesn't necessarily seem like that, in, you know, kind of, I don't know, like he's just, bored. And maybe that's my fault. Maybe our crappy interviews are part of the reason, but he had some really interesting things to say about kind of, you know, really dialing in his mental focus and talking about his coach basically giving him homework, you know, when he gets done to keep him mentally engaged in the fight. And in practice and training and all those things. And I don't know, I thought it was interesting. And he actually gave a shout-out to Conor McGregor and said, man, he just really respects that about Conor McGregor, man. He's got the mental game down to a science. So I thought that was pretty cool. Marcel Fortuna, Anthony Hamilton, interesting fight here. Marcel's a newcomer, jiu-jitsu expert, coming to the UFC against Anthony Hamilton, who's, you know, had some successes and some struggles. We'll see. We'll see what Marcel has. I don't know, man. You hate to say that Anthony Hamilton is like weak on submission just because he got absolutely mauled when he fought Francis Ngannou. I mean, jeez. When I'm thinking of Francis Ngannou, man, he'll pretty much do anything he wants to you, right? I mean, that's amazing. I don't even know if there was like great technique there by Ngannou in that Kimura victory that he had. I mean, it was the only submission. Well, I take the bag. He's had a handful of submissions. Only submission loss. I forgot about that neck crank too. Oof, Lexi Olenek. There's a beast of a submission expert there. So yeah, Yeah, okay, I'm going to go out on a limb. Anthony Hamilton, he's terrible at submission defense. So maybe, I don't know, maybe it's an opportunity for Tuna to step in here and make a name for himself. We'll see. And then, of course, the main card starts out with a big fight there, Jessica Andrade versus Angela Hill. Man, the odds makers like Andrade big here. Hill's making her return, you know, booted from the UFC after, I mean, starting her career in the UFC, just so raw. And then had a 4-0 run outside of the promotion, became the Invicta Strawweight champ, and now she's making her return to the UFC, and she's in good spirits about it. I had a chance to sit down and talk to her, and here's what she had to say.
Well, let's just start by talking about how it feels to be back. I mean, it's got to be exciting, I imagine.
Yeah, it's super exciting. You know, I kind of felt like it was going to happen for a while, but now that it's actually here, it's like, I don't know, it's nice. I feel like I'm back in the cool kids club, so so yeah, it's pretty cool.
Very nice. Talk about the time away, because you did, I mean, you had some success, obviously, 4-0 and Invicta, you know, I think continued to gain traction and popularity and fans and all that, but was it a little bit frustrating to be outside of the cool kids club?
Well, I mean, Invicta's cool too, you know? But I felt like a lot of people kind of saw me as an outsider when I was brought into the UFC with only one fight. All the other girls had either been fighting for a longer time or they've gone through Invicta and done that whole thing. So I kind of feel like I earned a lot of people's respect by going back to Invicta or going to Invicta, getting that win streak and winning the belt. And then coming back, so it was kind of a backwards journey. Usually people do Invicta first, or do at least like get more fans first. But I feel like I was able to earn a lot of respect of people who maybe before felt like I didn't deserve to be in the UFC. So you know, kudos to that.
It was very true. Did you feel that way at the time? I wonder, because it's easy in retrospect to look back. Because I think it probably was good for your career, right? I mean, to try to jump in right away and be in the UFC is damn near impossible. You got to kind of step back and build yourself. But I wonder, like, did you see it at the time, or were there moments where you're like, oh, me and my career, this, that,
yeah,
that sort of thing?
Well, you know, there's always that argument that I could have stuck around in the UFC and fought, you know, lower-ranked people and gotten my experience that way. But, I mean, nobody can really pick their fights in the UFC. You basically have to answer the call when they call you. Otherwise, you know, you never know when you're going to get that next fight. So it was probably better for me, because I don't turn down fights. I'm just like, I'll fight whoever. Give me the... and fucking rip the head off. And so it was probably better for me in retrospect to go to Invicta and just kind of build my experience that way by fighting people who weren't necessarily ranked in the top five of all strawweights. And, you know, I did still fight, like, really tough competition. Like, I still say that the girls that I fought in Invicta could easily compete in the UFC and do well. But just not having that pressure and not having all those eyes on you and being able to kind of have fun with, like, weigh-ins and you know, the photo shoots and stuff, it really allowed me to gain more fans and get more popularity. And I think, yeah, all in all, I don't think I would have been able to fight four times in 1 year as well. So, yeah, there were a lot of positives going to Invicta and getting that experience and... Yeah.
Very nice. How about the false start of getting back in? What was that emotion like to kind of be there and then it's taken
away
from you?
Yeah. Well, it was a weird one, because I had gotten a call from or an offer from Shelby to fight Justine Kish first, but it was like 2 weeks after my fight, and it was like a 5-round like battle. I had like a tooth loose from getting headbutted. So I was like, ugh, I probably shouldn't. And my coach was like, yeah, you got really messed up this fight camp as well. Let's take a few weeks off and then get back into it. So when I saw that Andrade needed an opponent, I hit up my manager right away, and I was like, Brian, give me that fight, you know? So it was almost like set in stone, and then I got the call from him saying that the USADA issue was a thing and it wasn't gonna happen on 30th. So that sucked, but I'm happy now, just because I was still able to get that matchup, because the matchup was the biggest thing for me. Like, I knew UFC was looking at me. I knew they wanted me for Kish or whoever, really. But just the fact that I feel like this is a really winnable fight for me, and Andrade's ranked so high as a strawweight, I felt like that was, like, just going to be a really good start for me to just go in there, beat her, beat the top, the number five ranked strawweight, and then, you know, just make a huge splash in the 2017.
So what is it about the matchup that you like? I mean, is it something about her style, or do you think, I mean, because she's looked pretty good since she dropped to 115, right?
Yeah, she's all right, you know? Like, but I see a lot of, I just see a lot of opportunities to take advantage of the way she fights. She's big, she's strong, she's, well, should I turn this on? Stop it. She's big, she's strong, she's really aggressive in the first round, which is all we've really seen of her, just like first round, a little bit of the second, but I see a lot of holes in her striking. I see she uses brute strength a lot with her scrambling, with her takedowns, and I feel like all of that is something that I'm really good at dealing with. I've never really had a problem with bigger opponents. Really, the people who get me are the smaller guys with little skinny arms get around your neck. But like when it comes to brute strength, I'm used to that. You know, just with training with guys and bigger girls, it's something that I'm a little more comfortable with dealing with. And the reason I actually went to Alliance is so I could get used to dealing with the really skilled smaller opponents. So yeah, I feel like I'm really prepared for this fight.
Interesting. And you said she's high ranked. So I mean, if you pick up this win, I mean, you're gonna be right there back in the mix. Do you feel, you know, a year later, now it is time to face those top tier fighters?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a handful of people who are pretty scary in the division, and I feel like I've already fought half of them, so, you know, why not? I'm ready for it.
I guess if I heard your words right, you don't necessarily feel like the champ is one of those scary people.
I mean, I think the way that me and the champ would match up is a lot different from most people, because most people, they think, okay, takedown. You know, takedown, submit, or takedown and hold. And you know, when she fought Godella and when she fought Carolina Kamflatovic, you know, they would hit her and it would hurt her, but then they'd go for a takedown. And it's like, why are you wasting your energy doing that when you just keep hitting her and hurting her? So yeah, I feel like I'd have a different strategy from everyone else who's like tried to wrestle her and lost, because she has really good takedown defense. But yeah, that wouldn't be my game plan against her. So that's why I feel like it's an easier fight than someone like this, who just tries to do everything. They try to knock you out, they try to take you down, they try to submit you. Like, they try it all.
Stylistically, it'd be a lot of fun, that's for sure.
Yeah, so. I think so.
Well, maybe, you know, some people might not have Fight Pass. They might not, you know, watch Invictus. So, I mean, if they saw your UFC run and they haven't seen anything since, I mean, what do you think the difference is? What are people going to pick up on that's different this time around?
They're just gonna pick up on me being more comfortable in there. Like, I have more of a style now. It's more of an MMA style, not really just a Muay Thai fighter fighting in a cage. I'm more of an MMA fighter who has really solid striking. So I think that's what they're gonna see, and I think they're gonna be impressed.
All right, so that is your FS1 main card. Of course, the preliminary card, you got four fights on FS1 as well, so you're going to get 10 fights on FS1 on Saturday. Curtis Blaydes and Adam Milstead, the featured heavyweight match there. Chris Grootemacher and Chaz Skelly, talk about two guys with incredible career records that don't get a lot of love and respect, man. They're grinders, there's no doubt about it. But both of them, man, they are capable of doing good things, and they got great career records to prove it. Ricardo Lucas Ramos and Michinori Tanaka. And, of course, Beck Rawlings and Tisha Torres. We heard from Beck earlier. Spoke to Tisha as well. She feels like she's in a good position. You know, lost her last fight. It was a very close fight. She admits, yeah, probably was the right decision. She lost, of course, to Rose Namajunas at UFC on Fox 19. She said, hey, listen, it probably was. You know, there were some things I could have done to change. But she still believes she's very much right there, you know, kind of in the title picture, especially with, you know, kind of the division still mapping itself out a little bit. So it is it's a big week in the strawweight division. A lot of big fights happened on this card. This ended up being a kind of an important card for the strawweights. And, of course, the two fights you have on UFC Fight Pass, Alex Morono, Nico Price. By the way, Nico Price, if you're not familiar with him, he made his UFC debut on short notice at UFC 207 in December. So we're talking about just, what, like 6 weeks ago. Submitted Brandon Thatch, looked fantastic doing it, and was like right away saying, book me again. They got him on another fight card. And every time I saw him at the hotel this week when I was over there working, he was just like, I told you I'd be back. Here I am. I told you I'd be back. Here I am. So this kid is full of energy all on fight week. And, you know, he's a guy that Alex Davis, his manager, had told me about him. Said, look, I went and found this kid. I think he's extremely talented. So somebody keep your eye on. But Alex Morono, if you'll remember, Alex Morono, his last time out picked up that hard-fought win over James Muntasri, man. That was one that I thought, you know, Muntasri was going to be able to beat him with that, you know, fantastic striking that he has, but that's not how it went down. So that was kind of a fun little result there for him as well. So I think that's a fun little fight to keep an eye on UFC Fight Pass. And then the night starts out with Daniel Jolly versus Khalil Roundtree. We're the MMA Roadshow is fans of Khalil Roundtree. I've saw him come up through the amateur ranks, and of course he trains in Vegas, and we had a chance to speak to him quite a bit during his run on The Ultimate Fighter. So definitely no question about it, he is in a must-win situation right now, but I'll be interested in that fight. So yeah, a card that not going to be a lot of media here. I will actually be in the back. So if you're looking for the blue shirt on fight night, in fact, if you want to win a bet with somebody, I tell them, I bet you won't see Morgan on the broadcast tonight. I'm the video guy with Cold Coffee not here. I will be in the back. So you will see me back there shooting all the post-fight interviews that we do. And Matt Erickson will be out front handling everything on the front end out there. So, yeah, maybe if you want to be like, dude, I bet Morgan's blue shirt's not going to be there. Like, nah, I know he's in Houston. That's why I'm tweeting. You listened all the way to the end of the road show, so you got the advantage. All right, listen, I don't want to make you hear my damn voice any longer. Cold Coffee will be back on the road with me next week, so we will have the crew back together in Brooklyn for UFC 208. Before that, though, I will get together with you this weekend for an and a half so we can talk about everything that happens at UFC Fight Night 104. In the meantime, thanks for listening.